Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Your Ben Jarofsky Show for this Wednesday, April 3rd, starts now. On today's show, Monroe Anderson returns to talk billionaires and more for Monroe Wednesdays. The Ben Jarofsky Show, a presentation of the Chicago Reader. ChicagoReader.com for everything there is to know in the city of Chicago. If you want to know what to do, where to go, what to eat, what to drink, if you've got questions, ChicagoReader.com has answers. And if you want more Ben Jarofsky, head to ChicagoReader.com/Jarofsky. That's J-O-R-A-B as in victory, S-K-Y.
Hello again, everybody. Ben Jarofsky here. We're calling this message from KC Wednesday, and here's why. Because a message came loud and clear from Kansas City today. It arrived in my phone in the form of a text from last week's guest, Governor Pat Quinn. And Governor Pat Quinn was on the show last week advocating for a referendum where the good citizens of Chicago are solicited. Their opinion is solicited. Do you want to pay for a stadium in Chicago? And the Sun-Times and the Tribune, you know, and cranes shoving us down our throats. You want this? This is good for us. You're going to love this. Bears, Sox, we can afford it all. We can't afford schools, but we can afford stadiums. Come on. Well, anyway, Pat Quinn says, "Oh, I put it on the ballot," and the Tribune and Cranes and the Sun-Times says, "That's ridiculous. That's absurd. We don't have time for that. Nobody wants to listen to what you have to say, Chicago. Shut up, Chicago. Fall in line and pay your taxes." Well, they had a referendum in Kansas City on whether they build a new stadium for the Kansas City Royals, which is one of the few teams in baseball, arguably, that's worse than the White Sox. And whether they would renovate the football stadium where the Kansas City Chiefs play, who are, of course, the exact opposite of the Bears. First of all, smart enough to know that Patrick Mahomes is a better quarterback than Mitch Trubisky. Somehow or other, the Bears looked at those two guys and go, I'm an expert. I mean, me and Monroe would have known. We should have been in charge of one look at Patrick Mahomes. We'd be like, draft this guy. Anyway, the good citizens of Kansas City voted down spending their tax dollars renovating the Chiefs Stadium. They had Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce saying, "Oh, do this. And they go, "Nah." I hate to say this, folks. I make fun of Missouri all the time. And they're smarter than you are, Chicago. Hate to say it, Chicago. Kansas City is smarter than you are. Like, Chicagoans, like, "I don't know. It sounds like a good idea. I saw it on WTTW. They had a very enlightened discussion about it, Ben. I read it in the Tribune. They voted it down. So good for you, Kansas City. You're smarter than Chicago is." Actually, that's so unfair, Monroe, because I apologize, Chicago, because maybe if there was a referendum, Monroe, maybe if there was a referendum, the good citizens of Chicago would prove to be as smart as Kansas City and would vote no. What do you think, Monroe? Do you think the good citizens of Chicago would be as smart as Kansas City and vote no to raising their taxes to give money to billionaires? Your thoughts?
Oh, I think they would vote against it. I mean, if we had a winning team going on, then they may go for it. But, you know, it's the average Chicagoan is probably closer to me than you. And well, that if you're into sports, you're into sports. I'm only in it to win it.
He's the biggest bandwagon. Actually, it's really that's actually not completely true. Monroe Anderson stayed loyal to the Bears throughout this whole season. He was watching Bears games and thinking, "What are you doing? They're terrible. You should go for a walk or something."
So it's only 18 of them, right?
17.
How many Bulls games are there?
All right.
How many Sox games are there?
There are 82. Yeah,
that's my
Bulls.
Point.
Yeah, no, it's a good one.
Yeah. Life's too short to waste it on more than 18 games on a losing team. 17.
So, yeah, you're right. Anyway, that I still waste a lot of time with my beloved Bulls. I'm pathetic, I admit it. But anyway, congratulations, Kansas City. I'll just paraphrase something that a person who is an advisor to Daily once told me, and he goes, "Ben, you'll never go wrong underestimating the intelligence of Chicago voters." They said it. I didn't say it. It was the Daily people. he was trying to explain to me how they were so successful with the TIF program. He said, because it's so complicated and most people don't understand it. And if you make it so complicated, after a while, they stop trying to understand it. And he goes, the media, it's too hard for them. They can't explain it. So if they can't explain it, they'll quit and we could get away with it. And he was right. So, you know, just so you know, folks, when I make fun of Chicago voters, I'm not the only person doing that. The people that run the city have a lower opinion of you than I do.
As a person who dealt with the media from the other end, as a press secretary.
Go ahead.
It wasn't a matter of we didn't gauge what position we were going to take on how stupid we thought the Chicago voters were, unlike you. What we did it on was how would it play on television?
Okay.
If the story was long and complicated, not many people were going to read it.
Right.
If it was on TV with pictures, then they would look at it.
Okay.
And the problem with TIFs is they aren't picture perfect.
No, you're right. I raised the flag of surrender years ago. I realize that the public will never understand it and will always be fooled by it. And it's almost like I'm not even going to try anymore. You won. You won corporate Chicago. You're going to get the public to spend its money on the Bears and the Sox. Anyway, maybe not. I don't know. Maybe Kansas City voted no. Maybe Chicago would vote no as well. All right.
Well, okay. See, I'm still of the position that the Bears are just using Chicago as a chip, a bargaining chip, and that they really want to be at Arlington Heights.
Yeah. You and Tom Scherer agree that, yeah.
Right.
They are just using the Sun Times. If that's the case, it's embarrassing how much they're using cranes in the Chicago Sun Times. Because Monroe, really, those guys, like, use me, please.
Well, it helps them sell pump newspapers.
Nobody buys a newspaper anymore, by the way. Nobody. Uh-huh. I'm the only one who pays for a newspaper anymore. You think about it, Monroe. Everybody the Sun Times gives itself away for free.
I saw
on the internet.
A reader box.
Oh, no.
I did a double take.
He almost passed out.
The reader, I think it was on Clyburn.
Yeah, that's about right. Yeah. That's about right, Clyburn. Right. Yeah. Right. Oh, man, we're dinosaurs. Reader boxes.
Exactly. No.
Look, you don't subscribe to a newspaper anymore, do you?
No. I subscribe to online access.
Well, you don't even have to pay for that. There you go. I subscribe to this thing. All right. So I spent approximately 10 minutes. So every Wednesday, you should know this, ladies and gentlemen, Monroe and I have a pre-show planning session, which never stays on track, never goes where it's supposed. It's like the most disorganized pre-show planning session. Tangents galore. I dutifully write down a cheat sheet of things we're going to discuss. Maybe we get to half of them, maybe, because then we start talking on the show. We go on our own tangents. But I was like, focus, Ben, focus. So one of the things I shared with Monroe that led to about 20-minute, I would say, conversation that then led to me going down a rabbit hole for about another 10 minutes on the internet has to do with Ice Cube. And Ice Cube, for some of my listeners who may not know, is a fabulously successful. He started off as an actor rapper, and he's moved into becoming a very successful producer. He's compared to me and Monroe. Well, at least compared to me, he's fabulously wealthy. Okay. How wealthy was a matter of dispute. And the reason I brought this up is because I was obsessively watching my Instagram account, what else? And I saw an interview, a sliver of an interview that Ice Cube did on the All the Smoke podcast with Matt Barnes and Steven Jackson. And he was talking about how he proposed to pay Caitlin Clark $5 million. This is why I thought he was rich. $5 million, Monroe, to play in his 3-on-3 basketball league. Did you know that? He's the owner of a 3-on-3 basketball league? Well, he is.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, he is. That's one of his many.
I didn't even know 3-on-3 existed.
Oh my goodness, that's a whole other story. It's fabulous. I love it. I love the. I love it. I'm hooked on it. It's good. It's an Olympic sport now. 3-on-3 basketball will be in the Olympics in Paris later this year. All right. Anyway,
I thought we'll be watching it there either.
Oh Lord, man, he's only a football guy. It's the only sport he watches anymore. You don't even watch tennis
and anymore. Winning teams.
Anyway, okay. Wait. Do you watch tennis? Do you watch the U.S. Open?
No.
Tennis? No.
I mean, I have, but not.
Yeah, in the past. Yeah, I thought it was tennis.
Again, when you have an interesting player, I would watch the sisters every now and then.
I knew that. Serena and, Williams. Okay, anyway, so he was talking about the new stadium that the Los Angeles Clippers basketball team were building in Ingleside, which is a neighborhood in Los Angeles.
Inglewood.
Inglewood. It used to be predominantly black. I don't know what the demographic makeup is now.
Hispanic and black now.
Hispanic and black now? Okay.
Yeah.
He said, so they're building the stadium. They're going to ruin the neighborhood through gentrification. He said this, okay? So this is one of the wealth, a very wealthy man said this. And I was listening, I smiled at myself, and I'm like, you're a capitalist. You should be welcoming gentrification. I don't understand when gentrification got to be a bad word for capitalists. You, Ice Cube, are a fabulously wealthy man who makes money by securing the best possible deal for yourself and the worst possible deal for the person you're negotiating with. Why would you care if capitalism that you believe in went to the extreme that capitalism goes and prices people out of a community? That shows that capitalism works. And then we went on, you defended Ice Cube.
Yes.
And you said, well, why don't you give your defense of Ice Cube for yourself? Go ahead.
Well, I'll do that, but is he a billionaire or not?
Okay.
You got the first part.
Here we go. So then from that, we went into a whole discussion. I go, he's a billionaire. And Monroe goes, no, he's not a billionaire. He's rich, but he's not a billionaire. And I was like, yes, he is. And he's probably the richest guy in show business. And
richer than Beyonce.
Yes. Beyonce. Richer Beyonce. That. I go, yes, he's richer than Beyonce. And so after we had this conversation, two guys shooting off their mouth, not knowing what they're talking about, I said, I'm going to prove Monroe wrong, and I'm really going to enjoy proving him wrong. I can't wait. I'm going to say it on the microphone.
One of those guys didn't know. It wasn't two guys not knowing what they're talking about.
And I hate to say, I didn't know what I was talking about. I was wrong. Monroe is right. It kills me to say it. According to Forbes, okay, according to Forbes, well, no, it wasn't even Forbes. Ice Cube didn't even make enough money to be on the Forbes list, Monroe. Okay.
Right. But of course, so I thought he was a multi-billionaire, but not a billionaire.
Because I've thrown so much money out on Ice Cube produced ventures, I just thought he was really rich. But in this world, he's worth $160 million, according to the internet. All right.
Right.
So who knows how close to accurate that is, but that's what they say. Beyonce, in contrast, is worth $540 million.
Yeah, okay? Half a billion.
Yeah, half a billion. And that was last year.
Yeah.
So it's gone up since then. And we also got a discussion about Jay-Z. And he is worth, are you ready for this, Monroe? $2.5 billion.
Right. Again, and I mentioned this quote to you when we talked, is I love when Jay-Z says, I'm not a businessman. I'm a business man.
Man. Yeah, and I looked that up. I looked up quotes. Beyonce said, I'm not bossy. I'm the boss.
Right.
So all these capitalists, okay? Right. They're all freaking capital. All right. So then I went down the rabbit hole of who's the richest person in the world. So let's see if you can do this. According to Forbes, who's the richest person in the world?
It's between Elon and I'm blanking on his name. The guy who owns Amazon.
Bezos.
Bezos, yeah.
All right, is that your final answer? Like we're on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. Is that your final answer, Monroe?
Who wants to be a billionaire?
Yeah, who wants to be a billionaire?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
That's what I thought too, but there's someone, according to Forbes, a guy, and I was telling producer Chris before the show.
A
French guy. I never heard of this guy before. That's how ignorant I am.
If you're a billionaire, it's to your advantage for people not to know how rich you are.
Have you ever heard of Bernard Arnault?
No.
Arnault. I could be mispronouncing his name. I don't know if the T is silence. I got to get Lori Glenn in here to help me with my French. Bernard Arnault. He is worth $221
billion. Okay. So
Jay-Z is at $2.5 billion. This dude's at $221
billion. Yeah.
Bezos is at $200 billion, and Elon is at $190.8 billion.
Yeah.
And this varies day to day based on their stock holdings. So
of course. Yeah.
So Elon screwed things up with Twitter.
And what you're spending, how much you're spending on their products.
Yes.
By the way. You're the driving force behind all these wealth guys.
Not me. You can't blame me for Elon. By the way, noticeably not on the list, Donald Trump. He's nowhere to be found on that list. He's got less money than Ice Cube. Anyway, Bernard.
He probably does, but.
Yeah, he had to secure that loan. We'll get to it. We'll get to Trump news. But he had to. By the way, this breaking news, I don't know if you saw it. We didn't even talk about this in the pre-show prep, but breaking news in the case of Trump stealing the documents, and Jack Smith has really thrown up. He came hard at the Judge Cannon in that case, basically telling her to put up or shut up.
Right.
Make a decision. So
he's going to ask that she be recused if she doesn't straighten up and fly right.
I mean, she's basically trying to throw out his case by saying Trump's allowed to have documents by virtue of the presidential record.
Right. Well, I said this on one of our earlier shows.
Yeah.
But basically her game plan is to make sure that Trump gets elected president. And then we'll have Uncle Clarence step down and she'll get his spot.
Wow. Phew. Damn. That's your choice, America. Heck of a choice. So there you go. I just had to run that by you. I still believe, going to our basic point, that a system that allows somebody like Bernard or Noel to have $221 billion, Jeff Bezos to have $200 billion, Elon Musk to have $190.8 billion, and Jay-Z lower down at $2.5 billion is a system that's essentially a dog-eat-dog. And the concept that Ice Cube was sort of floating, that there could be a capitalist solution to preserving home ownership of relatively poor people in a community that's rapidly gentrifying is absurd. So you're right. Either a capitalist or you're not a capitalist.
Yeah, right. And I disagreed with you.
Yes.
I said right on Ice Cube, because he is in fact a rich man.
Yeah.
Not a billionaire, but a rich man.
Yes, he's a rich man. He's not a billionaire.
Who has managed to keep the values he had when he wasn't a rich man. He's still concerned about poor people having a decent place to live.
So do you believe, and here's the question I pose to you, yeah, do you believe Ice Cube would put a cap on the amount of money he can make in order to make sure that poor people or low-income people could afford to live in the neighborhood that is gentrifying?
Yes.
You do believe
I think
that.
He would. I think he would.
You're saying that in the aftermath of an election last week in which the citizens of Chicago voted against hiking the tax on a one-time sale of a home on the wealthiest people. It's the exact principle that we're discussing. Will you pay more in taxes on the sale of your valuable property to guarantee that poor people can stay in this city? The city of Chicago said, hell no. We want all of it for ourselves, and poor people could go live under a viaduct for all we care. That's how Chicago voted. You're telling me that.
Okay. Now my question to you, Ben.
Yes.
Is because sometimes you're one of those guys who gets in the weeds on these things.
Okay.
Did you check to see where those votes were coming from? Were they the people who wouldn't have a Ice Cube's chance in hell of buying and having a $1 million house? Or were they, say, people in Lincoln Park and on the Gold Coast?
Okay, great question. And the answer to the question is, yes, I did check, because okay, I'm a complete nerd. I admit it. Yeah. In fact, I have the list right here. Uh-huh. So Ice Cube's financial compatriots, people who are in the same tax bracket, if you will, of Ice Cube, voted overwhelmingly no.
Right.
Okay.
I wonder why.
Okay. People who live in neighborhoods that Ice Cube movies and records may be popular.
Yeah.
Follow me on that. Okay. Yeah. Voted roughly 54% yes. 54%. In their minds, they're Ice Cube.
Right.
So my point is, Monroe, right, there is no way Ice Cube would vote with the people of the 6th Ward. He would be voting with the people of the 42nd Ward.
I'm telling you, he wouldn't, because how much money did you say he had?
$160 million, according to this.
Right.
I have no idea if it's accurate.
When Ice Cube was 20 years old,
yeah,
he had no idea that he had $160 million. But he knew he was singing about people from his community. And he was part of the song Fight the Power.
No, that was Fight the Power. I'm sorry. I'm not into rap, so I just know it as the Isley Brothers tune, but go ahead, yeah.
No. This was NWA.
You know what? My utter ignorance of rap and hip, I'm not even going there. I don't. Yeah, right. Okay, I'm not even going to pretend I know. Okay.
You didn't see Do the Right Thing?
I did see Do the Right Thing. Yeah, and that was the song that was playing on the.
Yeah, yeah. Right. That was Niggas with Attitude.
Yeah.
Which when, Ice Cube was a part of.
I forget the character's name in the movie.
who was eventually killed by the police.
Radio Raheem.
Yeah.
Yeah, the big box. The
big box. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're telling me, I understand.
Right.
I understand the radical roots to his music. I'm just saying he's worth $160 billion. Well, people tend to vote their pocketbook. You're telling me
his pocketbook. What I'm telling you is that he had no idea that he'd be this rich. Mm-hmm. And so he has enough money. Now, that's not to, I'm not saying he wouldn't like to have more money. Because if the richer you get, the more of a game it becomes. Mm-hmm. You know, there have been tests done on happiness. And once you make, I think the figure now is at $75,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter how much money you make or not. It's not going to impact your happiness at all. Once you have a roof, you're secure. You have a roof over your head and other creature comforts. Then you're either happy or unhappy for the same reasons.
I'm trying to think about if that's true in my life. Well, I'm still waiting to hit $75,000 a year. Broke-ass reader writer. Did you ever see the movie Trading Places?
Yes, of course. Back,
with Eddie Murphy and Don Amici. Yeah. So the concept of that movie is he's down and out at the start, and then he gets money.
Yes.
And his attitude changes.
Yeah.
And he becomes suddenly contemptuous of people who don't have money. And arrogant and entitled. And I feel that if push comes to shove, anybody who's on that list that of fabulously wealthy people, and including Ice Cube, Beyonce, and Jay-Z, would vote no on raising the tax on one sale.
Because the sale, if you got $160 million, I mean, the sale going up would impact me. But if I had $160 million, I wouldn't notice that extra $50,000 or $100,000 or whatever it would cost because I bought a more expensive house.
Okay, so you're thinking logically right now. Capitalists don't think logically. Capitalists are voracious. Capitalists just think about winning and gaining more. That's the capitalism.
It depends. Yeah, it depends. Some do, some don't.
I mean, I don't know. You're right.
There was some rock group back in the 70s. I can't remember who it was. But who the lead singer, and they talked about, he paid his taxes. He didn't play rich men's games on fooling around with the money. And he was a capitalist.
Yeah, I can't remember.
And he
was
rich.
Group.
I can't remember who he was.
It's that's how no one can remember. All I know is I will give you this. In the 42nd Ward, it was not 100-0 on the vote. On the tax vote, okay? I think they got I actually have the number if I can find it. I believe they got close to 70%, something like that. So I meant 30% of the people voted to raise their taxes. And you know what? In his defense, Monroe Anderson did that, okay? I'm just saying right now. Monroe did vote. Like, if he ever sells his property, he'll pay a higher tax. So I got to give you credit, Monroe. 74% of the people in the 42nd Ward, which is Gold Coast, the wealthiest area of Chicago, voted against the Bring Chicago
74%,
Home. 74. That means 26% voted no. I mean, voted yes. So it's possible that Ice Cube would be part of that 26%.
Exactly.
It's possible.
Exactly.
Okay. it's possible. I would not bet money in Vegas on it, though, Monroe. I'm just saying. I just think there's a knee-jerk reaction that people have about gentrification, which makes me smile, okay? Because as a lefty, I want government to take that next step and try to curb the excesses of gentrification, which is essentially curbing the excesses of capitalism. And I'm always defeated in that attempt, in that effort. And yet people who, like, talk about gentrification. Oh, this neighborhood was so much better before it was gentrified. I'm like, well, why don't you support efforts? Why don't you put it up?
But as a capitalist,
yeah,
I am disappointed that communists fell so gloriously back in the 90s, because communism kept the capitalists in check. Now there's no challenge, so they just are running roughshod over everything and everybody.
You're right.
Whereas before, they had to look like they cared about poor people.
Yeah.
So that communism wouldn't become more popular. It's like, oh no, we like money, but we also like poor people.
No, it's true, man. And even you're so correct. You've been saying that for a while, and you're absolutely right about it. And it is funny, in the aftermath of their victory, you heard a little bit about that. So we made fun of them last week. The aftermath of their victory on election day, the real estate spokespeople for the movement that crushed any hope of putting a little sliver bit more of a taxes on rich people to help some poor people, they crushed it. They go, well, now that we've defeated this referendum, we're going to get together. Remember we talked about this? We're
going to
together, right, and we're going to figure out a way to help the poor people. Right. I go, man, you sound like OJ after you quit it.
Exactly.
Who is going to be seriously committed? Go ahead.
OJ is still looking.
Yeah, he's still looking.
He's dedicated.
He's dedicated to finding a real murderer who got away with it, just like these capitalists in Chicago are really struggling to figure out a way to help these poor people, because that's what they want to do, Monroe. Right. They want to help the poor people.
Right. Yeah. I saw one of them when they were pledging to become a capitalist. He said, I'm going to become a capitalist so I can help more poor people. Reverend Ike had this great quote.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember.
I remember Reverend Ike. His radio show was on WLS. Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. He said the best thing he can do for poor people is not be one of them.
Yeah, I remember that. Oh, my God. Reverend Ike was a piece of work, ladies and gentlemen. And go look them up, youngsters. You'll the best thing he can be to for poor people is not be one. I think some editorial writer actually wrote something along the lines of, now we can roll up our sleeves and come to a solution. I'm like, you can't really believe that, right? This is like, capitalism doesn't care about poor people. What are you going to learn? They don't care about you. Tribune writers, the capitalists who destroyed your newspaper, you think they care about you?
Who didn't want you to have a union so you could get a little extra money?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. You actually believe they care about you? They don't care about you. No, they really do. They care about us. All right, Monroe, enough cynicism. Well, while we're talking about Beyonce, I got to ask you this. I told you I would ask you this. And I told my wife, I go, I'm going to ask Monroe this. So as everybody knows, Monroe Anderson comes on the show. He's pretty high, most widely regarded as America's foremost authority on white people.
Right.
And it's, I think.
Self-described.
The man somebody's knows more about white people. Right. Having lived among them, worked among them. And it's kind of relatively late in life, you know, because as Monroe has mentioned, he went through 18 years, never even seeing a white person.
Right.
And then he got to Indiana.
I saw three. There used to be a white person that owned a store across the street from my house when I was very young. I left that neighborhood when I was seven. So first 7 years, a white person owned a store across the street from our apartment. And then my third grade teacher was white. And my 10th grade teacher was white.
Wow. In Gary, Indiana.
Yes.
Back in the 60s and the
50s. Right, right.
Wait, so you had you only had two white teachers the whole time?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. K through 12.
Then you go to Indiana and they're all white.
Yes. That was culture shock.
Man, that must have blown your mind.
It was. It was, you know. And that was still, it was the early, mid-60s. And so as Nina Simone sang, I was trying to dress right and act right so that white people would think well of black people.
And all black people.
All black people.
Yeah.
Yeah, I felt I had the weight of the race on my shoulders.
How long did before that ended?
1 year.
And then you said that with that.
With Stokely yell, Black Power.
Yeah.
I would. I don't have to worry about this anymore.
Oh, Lord. That's what got him at that end?
Yeah, right. I'm serious. When he did that, because before then, I was trying to act right, and I didn't want to do anything wrong because they would blame all black people for it. And when Stokely said that the Philly dog was just as important as ballet, and I could do the Philly dog, I could do it in ballet. So I said, wow.
Can you still do the Philly dog?
Maybe. I don't remember. That was 1966.
I couldn't do the Philly dog, and I couldn't do ballet. I was 0-for-2, but in my mind, I could do them both. All right, so going back to being America's foremost authority, white people, and tying it to the conversation we had earlier, Beyonce has come out with a country album, and I've listened to a little bit of it. In particular, she covers Blackbird by the Beatles, which I love. Everybody knows I love the Beatles, Monroe, and every passing year, I love them more and more and more.
Yeah.
Which is, I don't know how that's possible, but it's true. So I'm like, damn, she does a good job with.
Oh, I was listening to my song Mercedes Blues, and I like it a lot more now than I did when it first came out.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
Some things like that. In fact, I'm on a tangent within a tangent. My wife and I, on Saturday, saw Herbie Hancock in Chicago, and Monroe, I was like loving it so much. It just sounded.
Where was he? I would have
Orchestra
gone.
Hall. I would have reached out to you, but at the time when I got the tickets, you were really preoccupied with Troy. So
yeah,
it was a fantastic concert. He did stuff from Headhunters. I mean, it was just and he sounded so good. He looked so good, and he's 83, Monroe.
Yeah, I know. He's exactly 10 years older than I am. So he's more than 83.
Yeah. No, he was born in 1940. I looked it up because I was obsessed with Herbie Hancock. Anyway, but that it's just how things.
I interviewed him in 1970.
For Ebony?
No, for National Observer.
Herbie Hancock?
Yeah.
Why'd you interview him for the National Observer?
Because I liked Herbie Hancock.
What? Wow.
It was a horrible interview. He didn't have much to say, and I didn't know what I was doing. So it never made the paper.
Oh, man. He had a lot to say. It was funny. I didn't mean to go on his tangent.
Then he was much younger than he is now.
He had a lot to say. He was funny on the mic, the way he introduced songs and the way he introduced his bandmates. Anyway, we'll just ignore that for a moment. Let it pass. But anyway, so with Beyonce doing this album, country music, it's going to be very challenging and difficult for white people. I'm joking, but I'm also kind of serious. I've noticed this through all my years of living, and it's been a while now, that white people get really threatened when black people move over to an area that white people consider theirs and really shine. Joyce and I, may she rest in peace, one of our favorite conversations is that, I probably shouldn't even go here, but we used to have this conversation. Monroe knows it because he didn't quite agree with us, but black people are superior to white people. We remember those conversations. It's true. I'm listening to this and I'm thinking this is going to cause people problems, you know, because like whenever a black person enters, so like when Harold entered Chicago politics, he was so clearly, demonstrably a better mayor. across the board in every way you would want a mayor, just in terms of his presence, his charisma, his quickness on his feet, all those, his ability to bring different people together. You know what I mean? If white people found it so threatening, they voted en masse for a Republican, Monroe. And it happens.
No, that wasn't why they did it. They voted for the Republican because Harold had gone to jail for not paying.
Yeah, you're right.
He spent a month in Cook County.
You're right.
Who would want a mayor like that?
Oh my God! It's the same way people vote for Trump. Oh, this is Ben. Come on, he didn't pay his taxes. My God, you're right. I said correct. Here we are, Beyonce. You know, we'll get into what they're doing with the mayor of Baltimore. Mayor of Baltimore. The bridge get nothing to do with it. A barge hits the bridge collapses. There's a black man who's mayor of Baltimore. Suddenly it's his fault. You get me?
And those guys on the ship who were brown and black people from other countries. Yeah. They didn't know how to steer a ship. Some white person that owned the ship was trying to have diversity, doing DEI. And therefore, he had all these incompetent people, brown people and black people, and they ran the ship into the bridge, and the bridge collapsed. And then the black mayor there, because he was affirmative action and DEI, he didn't know how to handle it because he shouldn't have been there. He was lousy as a mayor because he was black.
Yeah. And that's playing out. And that could be a force in this coming election, ladies and gentlemen, that attitude.
Or it will be.
And by the way, I mean, like if black people who feel compelled to have a career in white dominated media, echo it. Like, did you see Candace Owens saying, I mean, I don't want to go down this path, but she was saying the same thing when, like, I see a black pilot, I don't know. Like, do I trust the pilot? I'm like, what the fuck are you even talking about? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
That's
some of that Aunt Jemima stuff.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, so your advice, your prediction. What will be the reaction of white people to Beyonce's album? Will they try? Oh,
they are upset. Not all of them, okay? And that's the thing. I don't want all white people or all black people anything, because when it's all said and done, we're all human beings. And so the reaction is not all the same because of that. Mm-hmm. But I think back to when they didn't let black people play basketball. And it was because we weren't supposed to be as good. And then you had a situation where this one basketball player, I read it in a book many years ago, so I can't remember. I think it was on the Boston team.
Yeah,
I can't remember. But this player was black, was hit it for the rim, dribbling, and he passed the ball behind his back. He was the only black player on the team, to one of his teammates. And the white player thought that because he passed the ball to him behind his back, he was disrespecting him. And he got so pissed off, he took the ball and slammed it at the black player. I remember reading also many years ago in the 70s, this white long distance marathon runner was interviewed, and he was asked why weren't there any black people winning these races, and he said because we were too lazy. And I use those two examples because I think both of them were wrong.
Yeah, and there's it's kind of a when you have that attitude going into it, and then black people excel,
right?
Then it really like blows your mind. You follow what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, with country and western now, just to be clear on this, I Will Always Love You was written by Dolly Parton, and she performed it first. And Whitney owns that song from The Bodyguard.
Yeah.
She owns that song.
Yeah.
And you hear Dolly's version, and she wrote it and sang it.
Yeah.
It's so wimpy compared to what Whitney
did. And I love Dolly Parton, but you're right.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah,
I love Dolly Parton at that, but you're right. And there's an album. Oh, man, we should even say this is Joyce and I conversation, so I'm not going to say this, and we'll move on. But Joyce and I had this conversation many times. So I just move on. I'm not going to go where I was going to go about this country. There's an album.
Ray Charles did a country song
Ray Charles. Okay, I'm going to go there. There's an album where there's these black singers and white singers singing songs together, it's like, the black singers are like, oh my god, just keep the black singers on there, right?
Right.
And
I have a theory for that, because as you know, I, as the world's foremost authority on white people, I didn't agree with you and Joyce. I disagree with you. My theory on why this stuff happens is not because of genetic superiority or anything.
I don't believe that either. Neither does Joyce, but go ahead.
Okay. But it's because black people are discriminated against. And so they have to prepare harder, and they aren't confined by the leather-bound rules that keeps everybody else in check, white people in check. Rap came out of, just as an example, I know you don't listen to rap, but what happened was in the 70s, the schools cut back on music. You know, that was the thing. They cut back on the arts. And so black students, kids, didn't have the instruments anymore, so they started playing the record player. They was doing scratch, and they started rapping instead of playing. And that's how that music came into being.
What you just said before you went on that tangent about the origins of rap,
yeah,
actually was the position that Joyce and I had. You actually articulated the position we had, which wasn't genetic. We never said, oh, black people came out of the womb being able to do this thing better than white people. It's just the shape. The detriment is, and this is the Joycean position, that the consequences for black people are so enormous. It's like, if you have to exceed by being the absolute best, do you follow me, Monroe? Absolute best, the greatest. You got to be Michael Jeffrey Jordan, you know? That's tough.
Right.
Because there's only one Michael Jeffrey Jordan. You can't just be Ben, you know what I mean?
Right.
That was the discourse.
Oh, okay. You all didn't let me in on the conversation. I just heard the premise.
You were actually probably cooking dinner. So your advice to white people about, can you offer them any counsel, Monroe, when they confront the fact that Beyonce's better at country music than most of the white people?
Yes. My advice is sit back and enjoy it. And tell your children to stick with hockey.
No, people. Oh my god, stick to hockey. Oh Lord, we're about to see a.
Now there was a story on the news yesterday.
Yeah,
about this black kid who won a NASCAR race, 21 years old, and he won it. He's been playing computer games, you know, where you race with the computer games. And then he got so good at that he was given a chance to race on the I forgot the name of it, but it's just like driving, but you aren't in a car, but it's a computer where you're driving. I forget those things are called. Yeah. Pilots learn on that stuff.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, he was winning on that, so he was in an actual race, and he becomes the third black person to win a NASCAR race, in first, and he's 21 years old.
Yeah, that's...
So he might be the Tiger Woods of NASCAR.
Oh man, Tiger Woods, we have the best golfer. Charles Barkley was hilarious on this because he would be. I remember when Tiger was at the top of the game. He goes, "Who would have predicted that the world would come to a place where the best golfer in the world was a black man and the best rapper was a white man?" He was talking to Eminem.
Right.
And listen, just so you know, white people, don't feel too bad. Black people are as guilty of this in their own way as white people. And we're going to hear, I think, to a certain degree, a repeat of the Larry Bird arguments with Caitlin Clark. So I'll just, Caitlin Clark, for non-sports fans out there, is phenomenal, phenomenal woman basketball player at the University of Iowa. A mind-blowing, great basketball player. One in a generation, okay?
Right.
And she's her team is in the Final Four to win the championship.
And they're going to win.
I don't know. Well, that's a whole other question. But I don't know if they're going to win. There's some good teams out there. But the point is, she's white.
Right.
All right. So Monroe and I are old enough to remember Larry Bird, who was a phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal basketball player from the late 70s and 80s, played for the Boston Celtics. And so when it was challenging to a lot of black people when he came in the league. It was great because that was like the black thing, basketball, and to have a white guy dominate in basketball was challenging. And I had many arguments with black guys in the 80s, Monroe, who would tell me there are 10 guys in the hood who could play basketball as good as Larry Bird. And I would be like, no, they're not. Okay. Just calm down. All right. And if there are, please let the Bulls know about them. Okay.
Right. No, but there are a lot of black guys that could play. They were playing on the courts in the hood. They could play better than the professionals. When the professionals would go play with them, maybe they'd show them up. But the difference is the professionals were disciplined and knew how to play by the rules and played that way. Whereas the neighborhood people were playing neighborhood ball.
Yeah. But
it's very creative and very good, but
I understand what you're talking about.
Yeah.
You actually wrote about one in a book you did in the 70s, Billy the Kid Harris, who came out of Dunbar, who is phenomenal.
He's that was 80s. Yeah.
Bad. Okay.
80s. God. Yeah. 87,
87, 88. I thought it was the 70s. Anyway, my bad. Billy the Kid, if anyone saw him, he was amazing, amazing, amazing basketball player.
Right.
And he couldn't make the pros. He didn't make the NBA.
Right.
So that kind of illustrates your point that you just made.
Right.
But I would say Larry Joe Bird was on a plane. I mean, he's one of the 10 greatest, in my humble opinion, to play the game. And I think you agree with me on that.
He and Magic were up against each other. They help. Sometimes it's like Ali wouldn't have been as great as Ali was if it wasn't good for Joe Frazier.
That is correct.
Sometimes when you have two people competing like that, they both define each other and inspire the other person to do better even.
Yeah. There's a great footage that's been coming around the internet, Instagram. I don't know if you saw this. Well, you're not on Instagram. I was going to send it to you, but Ali, oh man, it was so great. It was Arsenio Hall was interviewing Ali and a young Mike Tyson's on the set and Sugar Ray, but Mike Tyson's the main one. And, Ali is beginning to lose his ability to talk. Yeah. You know, it's like 90s or something. Tyson looks so fit, and he just looks like Mike Tyson. Huh. And so Arsenio Hall asks Ali, who would win if you fought? And Ali points to Tyson and he says he would win. He goes, I was fast, but I couldn't punch like he could punch. And then they turn to Mike Tyson and I'm getting tears in my eyes. And they ask Mike Tyson, well, what do you think? Arsenio Hall asks him and he goes, you know what? I know I'm vain and I know I'm great, but that man is the GOAT. He goes, truth must be told. That man is the GOAT. And I was like, you know, I really loved it when Mike Tyson said that.
You know, they had a computer fight between Ali and Joe Louis. And Ali lost the fight, according to the computer. You know, they brought it. You know, I mean, they had them. They had all their characteristics and their moves and all that.
Yeah.
When it was over, Joe Louis knocked Ali out. And Ali went, oh, yeah. Yeah. That's because it was theoretical. He took it okay.
That's hilarious, man. Yeah, I remember that. They had another one, I think Rocky Marciano and Ali. Oh, my God. And they always made Ali lose because they hated Ali so much. You know what I mean? You know, the computer was programmed to hate Ali.
Right. He's like, garbage in, garbage out.
Yeah. You know, a white person programmed that computer. Anyway, that's good advice. Sit back. All right. We haven't gotten any Trump news except for briefly. Judge Cannon, the breaking news with Judge Cannon. The other Trump news that you had an interesting take on had to do with the fact that a judge in New York reduced the amount of money, or I think it was appellate court, reduced the amount of money that Trump had to put up in his bail. The bond that he had to put up.
The bond he had to put up.
From, what was it? How much was it? $450 to $175 million.
Yeah.
And Trump was able to somehow or other. And you shocked me before.
Some rich white guy in California named Knight covered that if he would. The 175 helped cover that.
Help cover that. So you had an interesting take on it. Go ahead. My interesting take is, first of all,
anybody who still believes Trump is a billionaire, I got a tower down in the loop that I will sell you real cheap. You can have for $50,000.
Yeah. It's,
and you can name it after yourself. If you be the Jones Tower instead of the Willis Tower.
Yeah, it kind of exposes that piece
of
thought.
Okay, but more, my theory on why it was a good thing that they reduced the bond is so Trump would have a chance, less unpatriotic chance of raising the money for it, because if it had stayed at 450, he would have to go to Russia or Saudi Arabia to get the money. And they would own him even more than they do now.
You actually think that he could have, that he would have done that? Would be that desperate? And how can he sell that to the American
people? And incidentally, the true richest man in the world is Putin. But he has so much stuff, they can't even count it all. It's so crooked and under the table.
So this spares us having to have our next potential president be completely beholden to dictators and tyrants. Is that your thought?
Yeah. And that it was screwed up the system because he wouldn't have been able to pay it. There was no way he would have been able to pay it. And so they would, they'd have to figure out some way to keep the system from collapsing, the whole idea of putting up bonds. And so they just said, okay, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. I mean, but this is how Trump has exploited things all along. He goes big and ridiculous. And then after he fails, which he inevitably does every time, then they have to make adjustments because he's too big to fail. So what the banks did back in his days when he lost money. This shows you what a bad businessman is, on a gambling casino. And that stuff is rigged. Yeah, the house always wins, as they say.
Yeah.
It's built into the machines where the house wins 10% of the time with the one-armed bandits. And he lost money on that.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
So he was borrowing money, and then he would do like he's doing right now. He would drag things out in the courts and everything. And then they would say, okay, well, you owe us $500 million. You say you only pay us $200 million. Okay, we'll take that. And we'll use your name on these places because that's worth something.
Yeah. No, the name is worth something. The man is a great salesman.
Was before it's done, it's not going to. They're going to be stripping it off that building on the Chicago River.
And why they haven't done it already, I do not know.
Well, because it's in the contract. You know, your Mayor Rahms looked into it, and he said, "Jesus, as much as I like to take that name down,
my man, can't do
it. I can't do it." It's in the, I checked with Alderman Burke, and he said I couldn't do it.
That's actually probably what happened. Rahm called, "Hey, Alderman Burke, who is the lawyer for Trump Tower. Oh my God, what a city, Chicago. Take it down, Chicago, and let them take you to court. Stop being babies. God. All right, that was the good news on that ruling. I'll now read to you a letter we got from a listener, and I'll just call this listener Debbie Downer. Okay, so here's the letter. A little trash talk in this letter, Munro. Sorry to burst Munro's bubble. Read the Alabama special election. And we talked about this last week, ladies and gentlemen, the special election. They had to fill a state representative seat, I want to say, in Alabama. The Democrat prevailed in that election. And Munro and I said, oh, this bodes well for Biden. Sorry to burst Munro's bubble, read the Alabama election, but I have friends who live near Huntsville, all with PhDs, and one of them always reminds me, people call that area the Yankee South. Huntsville is not in the district, but is close by. My friends are all academics and fiercely pro-choice. The point is that it is a more liberal district than the rest of Alabama. And so, therefore, Munro and I were far too rosy in our thoughts on the significance of that election. I could go on and on in response, Munro, but the floor is yours. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, as the world's foremost authority on white people, I can assure you that there are pockets of white people that not only are well-meaning, but correctly acting, but they're in pockets. And so that's what she's saying is, here, there's a pocket of us right there. And I say, thank goodness.
Yeah, it's just a pocket. And it's got a hole in it as well, that pocket.
Right.
It's a classic purple district. We made this clear last week, so we'll say it again. It's a classic purple district. Right. It went for Trump over Biden by about a percentage point, but the Senate candidate, Democratic Senate candidate, won it. The point is, it
was 20 points.
Yes, she won it 63. The one who just won it went with 63% of the vote. So it wasn't a sliver.
Right,
which tells
us in reality that even some dumb white people are smart enough.
Lord, the views and opinions of Munro Anderson are not necessarily. The thing is what I'm saying is that this presidential election will be so challenging to try to anticipate the outcome, because there's so many variables at play, one of which, of course, is the Gaza vote, the protest vote by many Democrats who are just repulsed by what Israel is doing to Palestinians in Gaza and are upset at, put it mildly, Biden for not more forcefully opposing it. So that's going to be a factor.
Absolutely. And for giving them some more offensive weapons.
Yes. And Monroe noticed, Monroe said offensive weapons. He's not talking about defensive weapons.
Yeah, we're not talking about the iron umbrella, whatever they call it.
And so so there's that's a factor, absolutely. Also as a factor, and I think it's undisputable, is that there are what used to be like thought of as Bush Republicans, McCain Republicans, you're more
Romney
Republicans. If you go way back, Percy Republicans. Yeah. Now I'm in ancient history, so I'll stop doing that. And these voters clearly detest Trump or are uncomfortable with Trump. And then you factor in the issue that Trump represents MAGA's views on abortion. That's problematic.
Well, it's actually the white Christian movement's
opposition to abortion.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Monroe, I agree with you. I see it the way you see it. I'm not. This is not like what I want. I'm not trying to, like, as the millennials say, you know, make it happen through hope and aspiration, manifest it. I'm just looking at this as a numbers game, and election after election shows that abortion is a motivating factor. And that was the case in that Alabama special election.
Right.
Again, it was a district that's roughly 50-50 for Trump and Biden in 2020, went 63% for the Democrat.
Right.
That's all I'm saying.
And my guess is, well, no, not my guess. As the world's foremost authority on white people, my explanation for this is that even some of the racist white people who wanted to hang with Trump, you know, it's okay, he can grab my pussy if he wants to, women, but they go, wait a minute. He can't be telling me if I don't want to have a baby. You can't be telling me if I get pregnant by a rapist.
Yeah.
That I'm going to have to go to term with this baby. That's, you have crossed a bridge too far now.
Yeah. Absolutely. Now, I agree with the letter writer in this. Monroe, I think you will too. It's always dangerous to put too much of your hope on white people doing the right thing.
Yes.
I mean, that's something I've learned politically.
But my guess is that the writer would do the right thing. And this is why she's upset with me and you, is because she would do the right thing. She does do the right thing. And so she thinks that because she's doing the right thing and her friends are doing the right things, that we're wrong. But I submit that she and her friends doing the right thing is good, but they're a clique in a wrongdoing area of the country.
Yeah, you kind of lost me on that one. I just know the person who wrote this is a big-time supporter of Democrats. So
right.
She wants the Democrats to win.
Right. I don't know what I'm saying. Okay, let me do this another way. What is happening all over this country is people have divided up into cliques and tribes. And if you're whatever clique or tribe you're in, that's your perception of the world. You know, the MAGA people think that the rest of the country is as racist and unpatriotic as they are. And that's not the case. They're more Americans that are actually believe in democracy, not our being an autocratic country.
Okay. And so to this point,
yes,
ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to introduce you to the latest wild prediction from Monroe Anderson. Where do you hear this one, Debbie? So this comes from the fact that in the Supreme Court of Florida has ruled that a referendum be placed on the ballot, be allowed to stay on the ballot in the November election, presidential election, will be on the ballot as to whether Floridians support a woman's right to get an abortion. That will be on the ballot. Having heard that news, Monroe Anderson made the following prediction this morning. So, Monroe, why don't you share that prediction with our listeners? Go.
And it's not that wild. My prediction is that Florida is up for grabs now. There's at least a 50-50 chance that Biden will win it.
Whatever he's smoking, I want some. Right, go ahead.
Right, exactly. If you look at all the races that have happened where abortion was on the ballot, mm-hmm. abortion won.
That's true.
Every last of Kansas was the first that gave us that clue.
That is correct.
And it's happened since then. And so
Ohio,
Florida is not immune to that.
So you're telling me that your theory is based on this notion that people who vote, come out to vote yes for abortion rights, will stick around long enough to vote for Joe Biden.
Yes.
And it will be
or in some instances, these women would have voted for Trump, but they're so pissed off about being turned into second class citizens that they won't vote. They'll leave the top of the ticket blank. If they don't vote for Biden, they'll leave it blank. They won't vote for Trump.
Well,
because he's bragging about how wonderful he is because he brought us Dobbs.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's a valid point. You can't have it both ways. He brags about how he brought Dobbs. He can't turn around and go, okay, I'm going to undo Dobbs. No.
He's now saying that 16 weeks is enough. He's willing to go instead of 6 weeks like Florida, I think it's Florida, is doing now. Or one of those other backward states.
Now, let's see how much he says that. He said that once. Okay. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? That Trump says so much stuff these days.
Yeah.
Let's see if he says that at his rallies.
Right.
Exactly. You know what I'm saying? He used to say, brag about the vaccine, and then he got booed at a rally, and then he stopped bragging about the vaccine,
Right.
We'll see how much he pushes that. But that's, ladies and gentlemen, that's Monroe's prediction. We're going to close down with that one. The 50-50, it's up for grabs, the state of Florida, which I believe Trump, I don't have in front of, but Trump won it well more than 50%.
He did. Yeah. Because of Hispanics. They got a much bigger vote from Hispanics than they were predicting.
In Florida. All right, I'll close by looking really fast. 20, here we go. All right. Wow. It was closer than I thought. I said corrected. It was closer than I thought in 2020. The state of Florida. Are you ready for this, Monroe?
It's 1%.
Donald Trump won 51% of the vote. Right. In 2020, and Biden won roughly 48% of the vote, and then third parties got the other. So, wow. You know what, ladies and gentlemen, he could be right. He might be right on this one. It was much closer than I thought.
The problem with Dobbs for Republicans is it pissed women off that they were turned into, that they had politicians deciding about what to do with their bodies. But then you start getting all these horror stories about it's like 11-year-old girl, 10-year-old girl raped and has to go to another state to get an abortion. And now you have the Republicans on the march to make any type of abortion nationally illegal. And then they're going to go after birth control next because they want to return women to being barefoot and pregnant.
I don't think I actually don't think that's going to be the winning ticket. No. For Donald Trump and Republicans. All right.
What's the black guy's name in that's running? That's so outrageous.
Mark Robinson in North Carolina.
Mark Robinson. Yeah, he said that was a big mistake to give women the vote to begin with.
I mean, I don't know what to say, women of America. You got to vote for Mark Robinson in North Carolina. And Trump's going to campaign with Mark Robinson in North Carolina.
Yeah, right.
Vote for Trump.
Right, exactly. Exactly. No.
Country is where right now. We can do it. We can do it, country. All right, we've run out of time. I'm going to have to close the show down. Monroe, thank you very much. We'll see you next week. Oh, happy birthday, Monroe. His birthday is coming up this Saturday. We're going to go out and celebrate my treat.
It's his treat because he's paying off one of a dozen bets or so. That's why he's finally getting around.
You know what? He never remembers from me.
Bets that he initiated, incidentally, because knowing I'm right, I don't go, okay, Ben, I'll bet you the sun rises in the east.
I do make some stupid bets, man. Thank God I didn't make an Ice Cube bet. I was like, no, Monroe, Ice Cube's worth more than Beyonce. No, you don't know what you're talking about. He's made movies. You don't understand. I understand the music business and the movie. Was I wrong? Oh, Lord. But I did not make a bet of that. You know, I've matured. Okay. I've
grown up. Exactly. Right.
I'll bet you.
Yeah, no, actually, under your breath, you said, I'll bet he's right.
No, you're like paraphrasing someone. What people said about George Wallace. All right, very good. That's Monroe. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Also want to thank producer Chris. He does an outstanding job. Hey, producer Chris, give yourself a raise. Take it out of petty cash. Peace and love, everybody.
And remember, previous Ben Jarofsky shows, Benny J. bonus interviews, columns from Ben Jarofsky, all available at chicagoreader.com. You can follow Ben on Instagram, check out all of his latest reels at Benny J Show. And then don't forget to tell your friends, like, subscribe, and follow the Ben Jarofsky Show on your favorite streaming and podcasting platforms.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.